Hello and welcome. So my guest for today had to cancel at the last minute because there was a big storm where he lived and he lost his internet and it wasn't coming back anytime soon. So it's a great guest. I'm not going to say who it is. I'm looking forward to it, but we're scheduled for a few weeks from now. So I thought though, instead of just not doing another episode this week, I would do another solo episode. And what I wanted to talk about today was the papacy. Particularly a defense of the papacy in an age in which the occupant of the papacy is doing such a good job of undermining that office. This is a difficulty for all of us Catholics today. We hear it from all sides. We hear it from Protestants we know that they argue against the papacy and they use Francis as proof against it. We hear it from our Eastern Orthodox friends. They do the same thing with a lot more power, frankly, than the Protestants do. We even hear from atheists that they can undermine, they can challenge our belief in the papacy based upon the actions of Pope Francis. So I want to do a defense of the papacy here because a lot of people are questioning the papacy. A lot of Catholics, good, faithful Catholics, are questioning the papacy. And I think it's important that we go back to fundamentals during these times, that we go back to and remember why it is we believe what we do as Catholics about the papacy, even when we see it being practiced by somebody who's doing a terrible job. We still believe in those fundamentals, those principles of the papacy. So that's what we're going to do today. So this defense is not going to be comprehensive. Obviously, it would be you could do a college level course on this and you wouldn't cover everything. So in the half hour, however long I'm going to go here, there's no way I can cover everything, but I want to just cover some basics that will help us as Catholics, I hope, to understand what we do about the papacy and why it is that we should still have faith that the church is teaching about the papacy is true and does come from Jesus Christ. So ultimately, I think the doctrines surrounding the papacy all fall on the unique role that Peter the Apostle had in the life of Jesus and in the life of the early church. And we see this in the Gospels that Peter is singled out for a unique role. It's interesting because as a Protestant, I didn't see that. Yeah, I knew Peter would seem kind of different than the others. He was mentioned more often. He had a few more times that he interacted with Jesus that were recorded, but I never really grasped or even paid attention to the fact that he's different than the rest of them. And it comes out in multiple ways. I think I'll bring up some of the famous ways, but here's an example. I'm going to pull up on the screen, but I'll read it for those listening. This is from Matthew 10, and it's the calling of the apostles. Matthew writes, and he called to him his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every disease and every infirmity. The names of the 12 apostles are these. First, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother. And he goes on to list the rest of the apostles, including himself, Matthew, the tax collector. What's interesting isn't just the fact that he lists Peter first, and Peter's always listed first in any list of the apostles. So first of all, just the fact that he's always listed first tells you something. But Matthew actually adds that word first, protos, that he is the first. He didn't have to do that. Think about that. He could just say the names of the 12 apostles and just said Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew, his brother. He doesn't say anything about the other ones except for himself. Matthew calls himself the tax collector. And he mentions Judas, who betrayed him. He lists him last. Judas is always listed last as well. So the fact that he notes that Peter is first explicitly, a lot of biblical commentators, and I would agree with them, say that that was not just a simple listing in order, but that adding that word first signifies that he is first among the apostles, that he is first among all those who the 12 who were called by Jesus. Now, alone, obviously, this verse does not prove the modern papacy. In fact, no verse proves the modern papacy by itself. But it's one of those things that we keep in mind that in combination with all the other point data points, it's one data point among many, in combination with all of them, we get to the Catholic doctrine. And then, of course, Matthew 16, this is the most famous one, in which Jesus asks, who do you say that I am? And Peter says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And in verse 17 of Matthew 16, Jesus answered him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jona, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the powers of death shall not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. And so, again, this is Matthew 16. A number of things just jump out at us about this. First of all, Peter is the one who answers for the apostles. He's the one that the Father revealed the truth about Jesus Christ to. He didn't reveal it to any of the other apostles who were special. Obviously, they were his special disciples. But Peter is above them all. It's to Peter that the Father reveals Christ's divinity, that he is the Son of the living God. And then, of course, he's Simon, and Jesus names him Peter on this rock. And of course, we all know that Peter means rock, and on this rock, and there's the whole debate about Petros and Petra, one's feminine, one's masculine. It's all a bunch of sound and fury signifying nothing, because ultimately, it makes no sense to say, you are rock, and on this rock, I will build my church. But he means two different rocks. It just doesn't make any sense. Obviously, Peter is the rock on which he will build the church. Now, it's also true, some of the church fathers talked about being the faith of Peter, and I think that's true as well. But clearly, it's Peter himself, the person of Peter, on which Jesus builds his church. And he gives him the keys of the kingdom of heaven. So clearly, Peter has a unique role, a unique and special role. In Luke 22, this is at the Last Supper, and Jesus is predicting Peter's denial, starting in verse 31. Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded to have you, that he might sift you like wheat. And of course, this is the famous, the use here in English. We only have one you for both the singular and plural. But in the Greek, as in most languages, there's different words. And so there are actually different words here. It says, but I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And so he's saying that to Peter himself, I have prayed for you that when you have turned again, strengthen your brethren. And so Peter, Satan is demanding to have Peter, that he might sift all the apostles like wheat. But Jesus prays directly for Peter. And when he is turned back, he will strengthen his brethren. That's the only person Jesus gives this command to. His role is in some way to strengthen his brethren, meaning the other apostles. He has this unique role in the apostolic college. And then, of course, John 21. This is after the resurrection, in which Peter and some of the other apostles see Jesus, and says, when they have finished breakfast, Jesus says to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my lambs. The second time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him a third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. And of course, this is reversing the threefold denial of Peter, but it gives him a unique ministry. It gives him a job to do that he is not given to anybody else. He is specifically told to tend my sheep, to feed my sheep. He has a role that is unique. And you see it also in the Acts of the Apostles. Peter is obviously the leader of the Apostolic College at Pentecost. He's the one who preaches to the people and converts 3,000. He's the spokesman for the apostles time and time again. He is clearly the leader. He clearly has a role. This is something that is just indisputable for anybody who reads the New Testament with an open mind. And it's not even that Protestants deny this role for him. They simply ignore it. They simply think it's just, it doesn't matter. Some, if you push them, might say, well, yeah, maybe Peter did, but that role he had didn't transfer. That was something only for the early church, only the first century church. And we'll talk about in a minute how that's not true. The Orthodox might acknowledge that Peter has a certain role, but often they will just simply meld his role to all the bishops. They'll say every bishop is Peter in their diocese in some sense. But that, of course, is nonsense to think that truly, literally, that to believe that, because Peter's among the bishops as the leader. He's not being said that you're simply the leader of the church, whether the local church or the universal church. He's being said you are the leader of the other apostles, i.e. the other bishops. So every bishop can't be Peter. Ultimately, yes, a bishop in his diocese has a certain authority that is through Peter in a sense, but not in any real way. There's only one Peter among the bishops. And so from this alone, again, we don't get the modern papacy. It's not from simply these Bible verses alone. What we see is, because why is it the Bishop of Rome we're claiming has this authority? And now we get into the history. We get into the early church. What we see here is that the Bishop of Rome, very early on, as early as we have any evidence, took on the role of Peter. That it was seen that the Bishop of Rome was seen as where Peter gave his life and therefore left his charism, left his mission to the church, was to the Church of Rome, to the Bishop of Rome. And this was understood by the early church. You can't find anybody in the early church who would deny that Peter's role in some level went to Rome. Now, you might have some debate about what that means, but clearly the Bishop of Rome receives in some way that office, that unique mission that was given to Peter. And so we're left then with a dilemma. We know Peter was given a unique mission. We know that only one person today claims to be given that mission, and that's the Pope of Rome, the Bishop of Rome. So therefore, there's three options that are available to us today. I mean, there's four if you count just rejecting Christianity, but that's a nonsense possibility. One is the Protestant answer. You simply ignore it. You simply diminish and remove the office of apostle from the church. This makes no sense. It's ahistorical. It's anti-historical. It completely contradicts the witness of the scriptures and tradition, the early church, the first Christians. And so it's no better than a Mormon answer of just saying there was a great apostasy after the apostles died. And so the Protestant answer just doesn't work. So then you're left with the Orthodox answer or the Catholic answer. Now remember, these are the only answers. You can't make up your own, because then you're just a Protestant making things up. You got to go with something, because if Peter is really given a role in the church, and if that role continues, you can't make up a new person that has that role today or change it today, because then that makes it, Jesus' promises make no sense. Oh yeah, I'll give it to you, Peter, and it's going to get screwed up pretty quickly, and then some dude in the 21st century is going to think up a new way to do it. So we're down to the last two options, which is the Orthodox answer or the Catholic one. The Orthodox one would be that, yes, Peter was given a special role, and yes, the Bishop of Rome has that in some sense, but they neuter the role such that it really is no different than any other bishop, and even more scandalously, they remove it based upon the actions of certain popes in the past. So because they believe that certain popes in the past went beyond their role or declared heresy or something like that, they simply say the office ceased to exist. Now, yes, I know technically the Orthodox would say the office kind of exists in a stasis, maybe in some type of waiting period. I don't know. I mean, I've heard their arguments. And ultimately, it doesn't exist in practice. There is no Peter today. What Peter was for the first Christians does not exist today in Orthodoxy. End of story. And I've talked to many Orthodox who will admit this, potentially off the record, including a bishop who admitted this to me. And so now we're left with the Catholic answer, which is there is a Peter today, and it's the Pope of Rome. And so to me, the evidence is so clear cut that Peter was given a special role by Jesus, and that role should continue for the life of the church until our Lord's coming again, that there's only one person who even claims to have that office. And so therefore, that is the person with that office. Therefore, the papacy really is based upon Christ. Now, of course, then, there are difficulties in jumping from what we know about Peter's role and the role of the Pope today. I think, though, a lot of the confusion comes about because there's been a dual development in our understanding of the papacy. What do I mean by that? There's been the official development, meaning how our doctrine has developed about the papacy. And remember, this is not evolution, or it's not something where something goes from one thing to become something different. Instead, it's a developed meaning. It always was there in at least seed form, and now we understand it better and we explain it better. There's the official development. You see that in the official teachings of the church, in the doctrines that are laid out about the papacy, and particularly, of course, at Vatican I, in which the Pope is considered infallible when teaching to the universal church, something that is to be bound to the universal church, and he's teaching ex cathedra. He wants it to be bound to the whole, all Catholics, all believe, everybody. And he's teaching, it's about something in faith, related to faith and morals. The other teaching, of course, about the papacy is his universal jurisdiction. He rules the church, the universal church. He basically has the authority to remove people, to transfer people, to change canon law, all that, he has that authority. And so that's the official path, so to speak, of development. But there's also been, concurrent with it, kind of the development on the unofficial track. And this would be the average Catholic's understanding of the papacy. Average Catholic's beliefs about the papacy, beliefs surrounding the papacy, surrounding the Pope. And this is different. It is related to the official development, because as the church grew in time and in space and in number, people did start to recognize more and more the importance of the papacy. I don't think, for example, the average Catholic in the second century understood as well as maybe the average Catholic in the 12th century the role of the papacy. Not saying he denied it, but I just don't necessarily think, because think about it. You're living in, let's say, modern day Syria and Palestine, something like that, Turkey, in the second century. You're a Catholic. You're just living your faith and doing what your local pastor's telling you to do and the local bishop. You probably have a lot of contact with your local bishop because the church is pretty small. You don't have hardly any contact, if any at all, with Rome. And so you don't really, the role of the papacy in your life is not that big a deal. Now, because, however, of political reasons, social reasons, cultural reasons, just how the world developed over time, the role of the papacy in the life of the average Catholic grew and grew and grew and grew. Some of that in some ways is very good. Some of that maybe not so good. I mean, you see it really in the Middle Ages, where the papacy becomes a political entity that's very powerful, very important. You see it then, for example, in the 19th century, when the papacy is the bulwark against the rise of liberalism in the world. It's the one defense. It's the monarch that will save us. You see it in the 20th century with popes such as Pius X, 11th, and 12th. Having a great impact on the world stage. Of course, you see it in John Paul II, who was Time's Man of the Year. I mean, the 1990s, man, JP2 was everything. He was a rock star beyond rock stars. And that's why it was such a big deal when Sinead O'Connor ripped up his photo on Saturday Night Live in the early 90s, because he was the biggest deal on earth at the time. And so this is the unofficial development of our understanding of the papacy. And it's not all necessarily good. It's not Catholic doctrine that must be believed. It's more the practice of what has happened over time. And so because of that, in today's Catholic Church, you see a lot of Catholics who treat the Pope far beyond what the official path, official development has said about him, but instead more on what the unofficial development has said about him, to make him an oracle, to make him a prophet, to make him a political leader, a cult figure. I mean, a lot of times people just are kind of like, nah, you're exaggerating there, Eric. When you say that, people don't really think that. But just get on Twitter for a little bit, go to Where Peter Is, something like that. And what you see people say, Catholics say about the Pope, like people will say, if you don't agree with the Pope's views on climate change, you're no longer Catholic. You've gone into schism. This is literally things that have been said that Catholics, some Catholics believe today. That, of course, is ludicrous, and it's not part of the official way we understand the Pope. But it is part of that unofficial, where he has become the all-seeing, all-knowing one. You see this mostly, of course, on the left today because they like the Pope. You saw it, though, under JP2 with conservative Catholics, that they would do the same thing. And I'll be the first to admit, I probably did that, too. I won't just say possibly. I probably did that, too. I can't think of any examples out of my head, but I definitely elevated the papacy. I have a whole podcast, by the way, from like a year or so ago called Rethinking the Papacy. And in that, I'm talking about rethinking the unofficial development, not the official. I'm not saying we should scrap official teachings. What I'm saying is we should rethink these unofficial ones where we've made the Pope a cult figure, a cult leader, you know, a prophet, kind of like the prophet that runs Mormonism, who can declare new revelations. If the Pope thinks, for example, that immigration is the most important issue of the day, that does not mean we have to think it's the most important issue of the day. As Catholics, that's not what Catholicism teaches, that we have to follow the Pope like that. Now, what you'll see, though, is some people, not left Catholics, of course, just embrace it with Francis. But you'll see a lot, the Sedi Vacantinus, for example, those who would reject the Pope, Francis the Pope, and maybe even all the popes back to through John the 23rd. They will give you quote after quote of from church documents about how we have to follow even the opinions of popes, and we can't dispute them. I always think it's ironic, though, because those quotes are almost always quotes by popes, usually from the 19th and early 20th century. Do you see the problem there? Do you see the circular illogic there? A pope says that it's his opinion, basically, that you have to follow the opinions of the pope, so therefore we have to follow the opinions of the popes. That is not official teaching. Just because a pope said you need to follow all the opinions of the popes, that's just honestly, ultimately, his opinion. It's not a doctrine, a dogma that has to be followed by Catholics. And so the problem is this age of Francis. The reason the papacy is so hard to defend is because Catholics feel the need to defend both the official and the unofficial developments. And what I'm saying is we need to defend and fight for the official doctrines of the church regarding the papacy with our lives, because they are given to us by Jesus Christ through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. We do not have to defend the unofficial developments where we make the Pope somebody that we have to follow his every opinion, his every whim. Anything he says is basically law. Anything he says, we have to agree with. His prudential decisions can never be questioned, and we just simply accept that. We don't have to follow that. But the problem is that Francis takes advantage of this. He knows that the average Catholic, the average pious Catholic, thinks it's improper at best, maybe even heretical, to challenge, to dispute, to resist something that he promotes. But it's not. If you know church history well enough, you know that's not true. That popes can be wrong all the time. Now, when they're teaching ex cathedra, they're not. And when they're teaching on the faith and morals, even not ex cathedra, we should listen to them. We should give them respect. We should follow them if we can, except for when they contradict or go against the teaching, the perennial teachings in the church. Perfect example, this is the death penalty. Pope Francis has made it clear he thinks the death penalty is against the dignity of the human person. That contradicts 2,000 years of church teaching, and even beyond 2,000 years to the our foundations in the Old Testament with Israel, that the death penalty is a legitimate tool of the state. It can be. Not saying it should be. In fact, I personally wish we didn't have a death penalty in America right now, but I'm not going to say it's immoral or it's against the dignity of the human person. It can be practiced in such a way that it's not against the dignity of the human person. That's Catholic teaching. And so Francis is taking advantage in a way because he's yielding this unofficial power for great damage. But as Catholics, what we need to do is keep that in our minds always, that we can defend the papacy and we should defend the papacy against Protestant attacks, against atheist attacks, against Orthodox attacks. It's the Orthodox who have the strongest argument now, and they're using it to great advantage because they're basically saying, yeah, we still have the sacraments. We have bishops with authority. We have teachings, you know, that go back 2,000 years. We have a liturgy that's beautiful and reverent and traditional. We just don't have to worry about Francis being a nut job or something like that. It's very attractive to many Catholic ears. I get that. However, go back to what we were saying before, what I was saying before about Jesus gave Peter a specific role. That role continues in the church. We simply can't dismiss that, because to dismiss that is to dismiss what Jesus did. And while the Protestants dismiss it de jure, the Orthodox dismiss it de facto, because essentially they have no Peter. And if you have no Peter, you don't have the Church of Jesus Christ. We have a Peter. It's Pope Francis. Now, if you know enough about the history of the church, you know sometimes that Peter does a terrible job. He did a terrible job on the night that Jesus was betrayed. He did a terrible job when he wouldn't dine with Gentiles, wouldn't commune with them. He did a terrible job during the pornocracy in the 10th century. He did a terrible job when he made politics more important than anything. He did a terrible job when he was living in a corrupt life. And he did a terrible job when he's confusing the faithful today. But he's still Peter. Jesus didn't say, on this rock I will build my church, but only when you do a good job, Peter. He picked the man he knew would fail. Because he knew later, other men in this office would fail. And he wanted us to know, even when they fail, that does not nullify the papacy. And so as Catholics, we need to not listen to the Protestants who just ignore it, not listen to the Orthodox who want to undermine it to a point where it doesn't exist, not pay attention to the study of the continents who are just like, this Pope's not good enough, so we're just going to say we don't have a Pope and live in this fantasy world. No, what we do is we cling to the traditional Orthodox understanding of the official teaching about the papacy. And the unofficial cult of personality that's formed around the papacy, we can reject. We should reject. We look to him as the head of our church, as our leader. That does not mean, though, it's like a political party, like the Sean Hannity syndrome, I call it, where he just goes along with whatever the establishment GOP says, or the Rachel Maddow, same thing with the Democrats. We're not like that with Catholicism. We cling to the Catholic faith, which includes the papacy, not to a specific person here on earth. Obviously, we cling to the person of Jesus Christ, but we don't cling to a specific person. This is our challenge. This is not easy, and I'm not claiming it's easy. This is our challenge. This is our cross, but we were born in this time, and this is what we are called to defend as Catholics. We have been called to defend the papacy in an era where the occupant of the papacy is doing a terrible job. I mean, in a sense, it's a glorious time. Because it's, you know, like in Lord of the Rings, when Frodo doesn't want to live in that time, and Sam says, people will speak one day of us. There'll be stories. Actually, Sam doesn't say about him, about Frodo. And I think one day, Catholics will look back and say, these Catholics had a hard time clinging to the papacy when the Pope was doing a bad job, but they did it nonetheless. And that's what we need to remember, and that's what we need to do. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up there. If you like this, please smash that like button. Please subscribe to the channel. let other people know about what we're doing here. And I really appreciate it. And until next time, everybody, God love you.